Good morning, everyone. Sometimes people who learn more about Torah become frustrated that the answer to every single question seems to be a machlokas. Don't we know anything? Aren't there matters that are clear? So, of course, there are many matters that are clear, and oftentimes there's much more that's agreed upon than that which is actually debated. But there is also no question that in many aspects of learning, we see a lot of machlokas. And one of the questions that we have to consider is, how do we deal with that machlokas? How do we understand the different opinions? And especially, let's say, in the course of this year, where we frequently find and consider together various approaches, so how do we deal with these disputes? So that's going to be today's topic. We're going to talk about Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim and the parameters. Somebody once told me it's Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. It's not Elu Ve'elu 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 Divrei Elokim Chaim. So there certainly are limitations on what is within the realm of possibilities, but nevertheless, as we'll see, within that possible, within that which is normative, within the views of the Chachmei HaMesorah and within Chazal, we certainly do find machlokos and numerous approaches to even sometimes very fundamental questions, and the question is, how do we deal with that? So, turn to page 32 of your Makoros, the very bottom. The famous Gemara in Erevin, one of the places where Chazal employ the idea of Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim. Shalosh shanim nechluku beis Shammai uveis Hillel. Halalu omrim halacha kemoseinu, v'halalu omrim halacha kemoseinu. Yatza bas kol ve'amra, Elu Ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chaim, v'halacha kebeis Hillel. So the obvious difficulty here is, what does this mean? If they're both Divrei Elokim Chaim, then why does the halacha follow Beis Hillel? Seemingly, the halacha following Beis Hillel implies that one view is more correct than the other. If so, then in what sense are they both Divrei Elokim Chaim? So we're going to consider a number of approaches. How do you like that? A machlokas about what this means. So the first view we'll consider is the Balei HaTosfos. They're cited in the Ritva and Erevin on Yud Gimel Amud Beis. They also appear in the Tosos Shants and Edios, as well as other places. So they write as follows. Shalu Rabbeinu, bottom of 32, Shalu Rabbeinu Tsarfas, Heyach Efshar She Yehu, Shneim Divrei Elokim Chaim, V'zeoser V'zeh Matir, how could it be? In other words, if something is Aser, it's not Mutter. If something is Tamei, it's not Tahor. Presumably there's one correct answer. And therefore, how is it possible that they're both true? Vitirtzu, ki kesha'ala Moshe lemarom, lekabel Torah, heru lo al kol davar, v'davar mem tes panim le'iser, u'mem tes panim leheter. V'shala kodesh baruch hu al zeh. So Moshe Rabbeinu comes up to Shamayim, and he has the same problem we have. Instead of getting a clear-cut answer, what the Gemara, and you'll see in a second, the Yerushalmi calls chatucha nitna, instead of giving a straightforward answer, what's halacha, this is usher, this is mutter, HaKadosh Baruch Hu instead shows him 49 stadim lahakel, 49 stadim lahachmir. Unbelievable. The Shal, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, what's going on? What's the halacha? Tell me what to do. What are you showing me different possibilities? Va'amar, Shiyehe ze maser l'chachmei Yisrael, Shebechol dor vador, V'yiye hachra kamosa. Answer is, you follow Rov, V'nachan hu l'fi adrash, U'v'derech ha'emes, Yesh tam v'sod bedavar. So the Ritva doesn't tell us the derech ha'emes. Maybe we'll be merames to one mahalich in that realm a little bit later. But al pi drash, so the answer is that both of them, both possibilities, Tahmei, Tahor, were both said by HaKadosh Baruch Hu at Sinai. So does this mean that no concrete rulings were given at Sinai? Obviously not. But it does imply that the matters that were debated in the Gemara, now, there is an interesting question about what do we say Levela Devilkim Chaim? Just Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, every machlokes in the Tanayim, even Amorayim, Rishonim, Achronim, what you and your Chavrusa argue about when you're trying to figure out what Pshat and Taisus is. So, we're not going to get into that question so much now. Maybe at the end we'll consider it. But let's assume for the time being that certainly when it comes to generally most machlokos in the Gemara and maybe Rishonim and the like, the Gedolim, perhaps we do say Elu V'Elu. That doesn't mean you and your Chavrusa necessarily. And there might be specific cases where we don't say it. The famous Rashi and Ksubis. You know, if there's a debate about what was said, a certain type of metzias, you know, what was did the Rav say today in Shir Tz Mutter as Aser? So maybe you won't say Elu V'Elu. But generally speaking, we'll assume that about most things in the Mesorah we do. And that would indicate that these debates actually are rooted in the various possibilities that HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe at Har Sinai. So where does the Ritva come up with this unbelievable theory? It's really a Yerushalmi. Yerushalmi is page 33. Amar Reb Yanai, Ilu nitna Torah chatucha lo haisa l'regel amida. So if the Torah is given with clear-cut decisions, chatucha, so there would not be l'regel amida. We would not be able to stand. What exactly does chatucha mean? So the Pnei Moshe says, in an unambiguous way, b'psak halacha b'lo netiyas das l'kan u'l'kan. The Ritvaz in Yerushalmi says it refers to the various ways that we could read psukim. In other words, sometimes the interpretation of a pasuk was not given, and it could be explained in multiple ways. Now this idea, the idea of the Ritva and the Yerushalmi that we're about to read, works nicely with a more open-ended revelation, Mahalich, something maybe we'll talk about later on in the year when we get back to the question of what exactly was given at Sinai. Was it all just the Torah Shebichsav? What aspects of Torah Shebalpeh? Every Gemara, all Havayos, Dabai, Virava? So that's a question that we'll perhaps return to at another time. But there are Mekoros that indicate that while a lot of conclusive practical halachos and halach l'moshe misinai and Torah Shebalpeh was given, there were many aspects that were left open-ended. One famous medrash that reflects this is that says, concludes, it says, Vaitena Moshe Amar B'Yavahu Kol Mem Yom Sha'asa Moshe L'mala Hayalame Torah V'Shocheach Amar Le Ribon Ha'olam Yesh Li Mem Yom Ve'eni Yodea Davar Ma'as HaKadosh Baruch Hu Mishehish Li Mem Yom Nasim HaKadosh Baruch Torah Matana Shenemar Vaitena Moshe V'chi Kal Torah Lamad Moshe Ksiv Batorah Rucha Meretz Mida Urechav Amine Yam Ular Baim Yom Lamda Moshe Ela klalim lamdu hu HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Moshe. HaKadosh Baruch Hu taught Moshe klalim at Sinai, but there were pratim which were not given. Rather, HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave him the rules and the principles by which all subsequent questions could be decided, but not necessarily the answer to every question. This idea is developed by the Sefer HaYikarim, and again, perhaps we'll return to it later on. One has to figure out how this relates to a number of other Ma'amarim in Chazal that seem to indicate that every single detail of the law was given to Moshe Misinai. What does it mean, Kol Masha Talmud Vasik Asid Lahoros? So we'll return to those questions later, but that's what Yerushalmi says. Yerushalmi over here says that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did not give Moshe the lemaisa, practical application of every conceivable question. So, ma'atam v'yidaber Hashem el Moshe, amr lefan v'ibonu shel olam, hodieni heach hi halacha, amr lo, achrem matos. So having been given these possibilities, Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, so what do I do? Tachlis, And HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, Achrei Rabim Lahatos, you follow Rav. Rabu HaMezakin Zachu, Rabu HaMechayvin Chiyavu, Kedei Shetei HaTorah Nidreshes, Mem Tes Panim Tameh, Mem Tes Panim Tahor. Minyan V'diglu, V'diglu Alay Ava, V'cheinu Omer, Hashem, Imros Hashem Toros, Kesef Tzaruf Ba'alil, La'aretz Mizukak, Shiv Asayim, Va'omer Meisharim Me'evucha. In other words, sevens, Shivasayim, multiple sevens, i.e. 7 times 7, 49. So according to the Chachmei Tzarfas, what do we mean when we say Elu ve'elu Divrei Elokim Chayim? That both are Divrei Elokim Chayim in the most literal sense. That they're both said at Sinai from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They're literally Divrei Elokim Chayim. The implication is that they're both equally valid. Because Hashem refuses to be machri. He says that the hachra is given to you, to Klal Yisrael. Now, what do we mean when we say that that both are true? So if you look at the Pnei Moshe on that Yerushalmi, he writes, Lo hayakiyum li'olam, dehatorah, again, what are we saying? The Yerushalmi said that if it was given chatucha, with clear-cut decisions, lo hayal regel amida. So what exactly does that mean, lo hayal regel amida? So he says, lo hayakiyum li'olam, dehatorah tzarch shetiyah nidresh es panim lekan, ulekan, this doesn't tell you exactly why. Maybe he means that there would be no room for Talmud Torah, which is supposed to involve the creative use of the intellect. And that's possible specifically due to the ambiguity. The Karban Eda writes, it's the lack of ambiguity that allows the Torah to address all conceivable questions. In other words, we know every time we have a new question, new technology arises, some type of new situation that has never come up before, so we turn to the Torah to answer our question. If the Torah is given, it was written like the Kitzur Shulchan Aruch, you know, this is Aser, this is Mutter, this is Aser, this is Mutter, so then we wouldn't necessarily be able to apply the Torah to new situations. It's specifically because the Torah is presented in a way that allows for understanding and interpretation and is not chatucha, so that we're able to use the Torah to decide to relate to new questions. The way he puts it is, lo haya be'efshar l'skayim ba derov pa'amim ha'inyin mishtana. In other words, the Torah gives us the basic principles, but the lemaisa question that comes to you, so that's not exactly like the principles that's given in the Torah. And the reason why we're able to use the Torah to answer that question is precisely because it's the klalim that we're given, or the possibilities. Essentially, what it's saying is that it facilitates the Torah's ability to respond to every new question that ever comes up without undermining its essential immutability. Another place where perhaps you see this idea is the Gemara in Shabbos on Daf Kuf Lamed, bottom of page 33, that says the following. We know that Rabbi Eliezer holds that Machshirei Milar Docha Shabbos, not just the actual Mila itself, which is a Malacha, but even Hechsher Mila, it says that in his town, the Mamish would go so far, they would chop down the trees to light a fire, to make the knife, to do the Mila. It's a little strange, right? They had no knives in the whole town. Shlomo, if you said they needed to, I don't know, sharpen the knife, but they had no fire? Rav Moshe Feinstein actually addresses that question. It's an Akdama Tigros Moshe. They wanted to show the Chavivas of the Mitzvah. So they hid all their knives before Shabbos, so they would have to make new ones. So the Gemara says, you know, of course we don't paskin like Rabbi Eliezer. According to the halacha, if you were to do that, that's a chilul Shabbos deraisa. So one might have expected that surely there would be some type of consequence for their having followed the view of Rabbi Eliezer. Now, we don't blame them. The inhabitants of the town of Rabbi Eliezer were doing the right thing by following the Rav, until there was some type of hachra, so a person should follow their Rebbe. But still, one would have expected that there be some type of natural consequence, when I say natural, I don't mean physical, but spiritual consequence to their actions. The Gemara says that's not true. Amar Rabbi Lazar, Ir Achas Haisa, sorry, Amar Rabbi Yitzchak, Ir Achas Haisa Beretz Yisrael, Shayu Osim Rabbi Lazar, Vayumesim Bizmana, Velo Od, Ela Shepam Achas Gazra Malchus Harisha Gzeira Al Yisrael, Al Hamila, Val Osa Ir Lo Gazru. Not only did they live complete lives, the implication is that there were no harmful effects from their decision, but once there was even a gzera, the Romans banned circumcision, and that ban was not applied in this town. So they were rewarded. So how do we understand this? How could this be? Again, the reward I could even understand. Maybe they're rewarded for showing exuberance, for showing Mesiras Nefesh, for the mitzvah, but why was there no consequence? Usually we assume, it's interesting, the Ran, when he addresses this question in the Drashos, we'll refer to his position a little later on, says that if you think that there's no inherent ontological value to mitzvot, so then he won't be bothered by the question. But the position that we accept is that's not true, that the Torah reflects some type of metaphysical reality and there are natural consequences to violating the Torah. And therefore, if they did something that we understand as being Chilul Shabbos Gamor, so how could there be no consequences? How is it that they could simply live out their lives? Mace lo mesu kodem ismanam. So if we understand, like the Ritva, like the French rabbis, like the Bali Atoso, so then there's no question. Because the truth of the matter is, they're both equally Divrei Elokim Chaim. So the obvious question that bothers many people with this approach is it's very hard to understand. How could they both be true? There is no real answer. There's no MS. There's no truth which one is Tame and which one is Tahor. How could that be? So other approaches are given. The Chida has three Mahalchim, actually. Take a look at the first one, page 14. So he says, no, of course, when we say Elu v'Elu, we don't really mean to say that they're both equally true. There is a true answer in Shamayim. So what do we mean when we say Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim Chayim? Ein perusho d'shneim emes. Ela lihyos de'ein ha'or nikar ela mitoch ha'choshech nimtza d'svara ha'minagedes to'il lavin heitev Hasvara hamitis be'etzem. Umitzad ze, karibanami develokim chayim. Uliolom desvara emes, vasvara cheres, eina emes. The truth is, of course, one answer is right, and one answer is wrong. It's either tahor or it's tame, and there is a true answer. So what do we mean, elu v'elu? We all know from learning that a lot of times we appreciate a particular shita by considering the alternative. When somebody says a shtickle Torah, a chiddush and a sugya, I think this is pshat. This is pshat as opposed to what? A lot of times you'll understand Beis Hillel when you understand Beis Shammai and which particular point that Beis Shammai says that Beis Hillel is disagreeing with. So each view that we study, and that's one of the reasons why, of course, we study even the positions that aren't halach lamaisa, helps us understand and comes to a closer understanding of the truth. And that's what Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim Chayim means. But it doesn't mean that they're both right. Now, if you learn, like the first pshat, like the Ritva, the Lashon, the Gemara, and Erevin is very meduyak. Elu v'Elu divrei Elokim Chayim, but still, the halachas kedivrei Beis Hillel. If you understand like this, so halacha kedivrei Beis Hillel presumably means Beis Hillel's right, and that's the emes, and Beis Shammai is enu emes. So you don't need to say both. What exactly does elu v'elu mean? Oh, the halacha is like Beis Hillel, but Beis Shammai helped us understand Beis Hillel a little better. So, not so clear. It's perhaps a little less meduyuk, but on the other hand, of course, it's something we could understand. it's very easy to understand elu v'elu according to this first pshat in the Chida. We understand what we mean when we say that one answer is correct. In reality, this is tamei, this is tahor. Kadosh Baruch Hu gave Moshe Rabbeinu at Sinai the correct halacha. However, there's value to studying both opinions. They both have what to teach us. Yeah.
It seems problematic because, yeah, you get a better understanding of the right opinion, but there's still somebody practicing the wrong opinion.
Ah, so now you could ask, according to this interpretation of the Chida, how would we explain that story with Rabbi Eliezer, right? So it's a good question. I don't know the answer. Perhaps he would say, and we'll see the Ran suggest something along these lines, they were protected from the Gzeira as a reward for their having been Moser Nefesh for Mila. And perhaps there was some type of supernatural intervention that prevented the normal consequences of Chilul Shabbos from being applicable to them, because we don't blame them for doing the what turned out to be the wrong thing. Adarabba, they were doing the right thing, right? The halacha is you should ask your Rebbe what to do, and at that point before there was Hachra, they were right in following Rebbe Eliezer's view. So they certainly are not going to be punished for their having followed that view. And maybe even the normal consequences were protected. They were protected from them because of some type of intervention. So we don't, you know, we're not going to say that they're going to go to Gehenna. That's Pashut. But it doesn't mean that what they did was right. What they did was wrong. Okay, they did what's wrong, bonus. So they're not going to get an Aveira. But that doesn't mean that it was right. Another possibility the Chida considers, Nimtza de'elu ve'elu divrei Elokim Chayim, ki yisodos v'tamei shtei asvaros emes, rak shebechilof hanosim yishtane hadin. I think what he's saying here is that there is validity to the logic of each view. Again, like when we learn Gemara, so we learn a machlokas Rambam and Rashba, and we say, what's the lumdus of the Rambam, and what's the lumdus of the Rashba? And l'chora, there is a very powerful argument to be said for both sides. So that's one of the reasons why we study both. But in the end of the day, one is still right and one is still wrong. The way the Maral puts this in the Sefer Baragola, you have it again here on page 34, below the second shot in the Chida. She'af im adavar tamei, yefshe shelo yelo tzad b'china el tahara shalma, v'chein im adavar tahor, yefshe shelo yelo b'china shel tuma. That there are tzadim lekan ulekan, and there are emistik at tzadim lekan ulekan. So while in the end of the day one position is emes and one position is eino emes, it doesn't mean that it's so simple, because there is a valid argument in favor of both positions. But we're still not going to go so far as to say they're equally true. Certainly that's what the Chida is saying. Another mahalich can be seen in Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz. I saw this makor, a couple of these makoros, I think, in an article I once read, or it was a shir that was given by Rav Lichtenstein. I don't remember what he said, but the makoros, some of them are from that. This is a Tosus Rabbeinu Peretz, same place in Erevin. Umikom makom kasha, mimaisim shekvar hayu, kigon in other words, after quoting the Mahalich of the Chachmei Tzarfas that we saw in the Ritva, Rabbeinu Peretz says, okay, I understand that they're tzadim lakan ulakan. But l'maisa, the Mizbeach was only one thing, right? If there's a debate about the Mizbeach, so it's not simply a debate about how to interpret the Psukim concerning the Mizbeach, about which we could at least theoretically say, yeah, the Psukim could be equally interpreted according to both interpretations. But here, there's a debate about what was. How big was the base, the Mizbeach in the base of Mikdash? What were its measurements? Right? L'chor, it was one or the other. How could you say elu v'elu? Says Rabbeinu Peretz, v'yesh lomar, Dim kulu lo haya ala b'chad inyana. Degam kulu lo haya ala b'chad inyana. Ela chad muchach mikra debedin haya lo lios hachi. V'chad muchach mikra debedin haya lo lios hachi. V'od deka amar elu v'elu develokim chayim perush. Demitoch ha-psukim yesh mashmaus l'midresh kemar u-kemar. Aval vadai lo haya ela b'inyan echad. So lamaisa, of course, it was one or the other. What does elu v'elu divilakim chai mean? It means precisely that conceptually both are equally true. You could interpret the psuk in both ways. It's true, tachlis, one was right in mitzias and one was wrong, but that doesn't contradict the notion of elu v'elu divilakim chai because they're both equally valid interpretations of the Torah. I once heard in the name of Rav Yaakov Weinberg, the Rosh Yeshiva of Ner Yisrael, Zichron Levracha, that you could compare this to x squared equals 4, where the answer is 2 and negative 2. Both 2 and negative 2 solve the equation. If you plug in negative 2, the answer is 4. If you plug in 2, the answer is 4. So the same thing with Elu V'Elu is what Rabbeinu Peretz is saying over here. Any interpretation that fits in the Pasuk, obviously, there's fits and there's fits. Doesn't mean like you can shtup anything in you want and say, oh, this is what the pasuk means. But if it legitimately fits, it concords with this pasuk, it concords with Kol HaTorah Kula in a broader sense. So then, it's Divrei Elokim Chayim. And the fact that the Metzius was like one or the other doesn't take away from the truth value of each position. Because both of them equally can be understood from the psukim and the pasuk might have even been mechavein to both of them, like the Ritva says. It's simply that in Metzias, okay, the Mizbeach was one way or the other. Oh.
How is this? Is this the same sheet as the Ritva?
So this is, it might be. In other words, this is one way to read this. It's not clear, but one way to understand this is, how would the Ritva apply his model of Elu V'Elu to a question of what was in Metzias? And the answer is, we could apply the Ritva's multiple truth Mahalech to a Machlokas that relates to something that had a correct answer in Metzias using the following understanding. So it definitely can work with the Ritva, or the Chachmei Tzarf has quoted in the Ritva.
Is the alternative, like, if one does not understand the Ritva, then one forced to assume that even if HaKadosh Baruch Hu was not mechavein to a certain understanding of the pasuk, but I can stick into the pasuk, so that's also Divrei Elokim Chayim?
So, let's go back to the Chida, for example. Yeah, exactly. And we'll see other possibilities like that. But the answer is, when we say Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, it doesn't mean that they're both equally MS, like the Ritva was saying. Really, one is MS and one is Eino MS. Now, that doesn't mean there's no value in it. Doesn't mean it's not a kiyum of Talmud Torah. It doesn't mean that it can't help us understand the absolute truth, and so on and so forth. But it doesn't mean that they're equally true. Another approach, which, yeah.
Are all these approaches really saying halachic mindset? If I'm following my Rebbe, when my Rebbe follows the wrong side, the Rama was wrong against the Rebbe, let's say.
Mm-hmm.
Onus as opposed to the Shogun at the end of the day?
No, I don't think so. In other words, nobody's going to blame you for following your Rebbe, or if the Rebbe himself who came to that conclusion after trying his best to understand the Torah, nobody's going to blame the person who does that. So that, there's no debate. But the question is, how do we understand your action? Was the action the incorrect action, or was it really equally valid and equally correct? According to the Ritva, it could be equally value. So, yeah, if you wish, one way to look at it, are they both right, or is one right and one wrong? It's just that, again, you did the wrong thing, we're not going to hold you accountable. But Lamaisa, one is right and one is wrong. And that's the fundamental debate. So, according to the Ritva, they're both equally correct. According to the Chida, they're not both equally correct. Another approach we'll see right now in Iran, the Ran also rejects this idea of how could both be true? This, multiple truths. L'maisa, Hashem said one thing. There's one real answer. So how do we understand Elu V'Elu? So the Ran deals with this in his seventh drasha. And the Ran basically understands an amazing thing. There are, just for your, for there are others that take similar approaches to the Ran relating to halachic autonomy. The Ktsos in his Hakdama famously develops the idea of the Ran. If you look at the Hakdama to Igros Moshe, he has a similar mahalich. It's like a classical thing to talk about in Hakdama to Sefer, because you have to like justify what you're doing and how you're arguing with everybody and the like. So the Ran basically says the following. The Ran understands the Yerushalmi that we cited earlier differently. When Hashem told Moshe that the various options given at Sinai were left for him to choose, Hashem was laying the groundwork for halachic autonomy. The idea that humans are supposed to interpret the Torah using our own feeble and fallible minds, and the conclusion that we see as correct is that which should be followed. But that doesn't mean to say that in a conceptual sense, both of them are equally true. When HaKadosh Baruch Hu told Moshe Rabbeinu, you figure out the answer, you follow Rov, he wasn't saying, as the Ritva said, that means that they're both equally true. Moshe Rabbeinu was being told something else. Moshe Rabbeinu was being told that Lo Bashamayim Hi, Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to resolve this question using the human intellect, using the process of Talmud Torah. But not that they're both equally true. In Shamayim, there is a right answer. But Hashem is telling us that's not the answer you should be following. The answer you should be following is that which you see is correct. Take a look at the Ran here, page 35. Shemeachar she'achras ha'Torah nimsira lahem b'chayehem, v'sichlam haya mechayev letamei, haya min ha'ra'ui she'yeh tamei. Afal pishu hefech mina emes, shekain mechayev haseichel haenoshi. V'ashar, afal pishu omrim emes, ein ro'ui la'asos maisa kain v'darke ha'Torah. Kimo shelo tiru bal machlokoso shel Rebbe Eliezer, afal pishu nitna lehem baskol min ha'shamayim, shalocha kedvarav. So here the Ran famously invokes the Gemara in Bava Metzia, of Tanur Shalachnai, top of page 35. The Gemara you're all familiar with. Tana Ba'osa Shah, Heshev Eliezer, Kol Tshuvo Sheba'olam, Filo Kiblu Heimenu. It's interesting, by the way, that this is the same Rebbe Eliezer that we were talking about before in terms of Machshirei Mila. So Eliezer brought every proof in the world, and the Chachamim did not accept it. Amalahemim Halacha Kamosi, Charavzu Yochiach. Nekar Charav Mimakomo, Mea Amma. So the Buxer tree moved 100 Amos. V'amri la arba meos Amma. Amru lo ein mevien raya min acharav. Chazav yamru lahem im alacha kamosi. Amma samayim yochichu. Chazav amma samayim lo achareyem. Amru lo ein mevien raya me amma samayim. Chazav amru lahem im alacha kamosi. Kosli beis amedrish yochichu. So they went back, they went forth. The walls moved. Right? So after Eliezer failed to convince the Chachamim of his position using rayos from Svara, from Sukkim, so he tried to prove it using miracles, and the Chachamim said that we don't use miracles to determine the halacha. Chaz v'amalahem, im halacha kamosi min ha'shamayim yochichu, yata abaskol v'amra, ma'alacha meitzo Eliezer, shalach kamosi b'chol makom. The halacha is like Rebbe Eliezer. So what does this mean? So one possibility is to say that these nisim happened, the bas kol happened, l'chvodo shel Rebbe Eliezer. But the way the Ran understands it is no. The nisim happening reflects that taka, klapesh maya galia, aliba de emes Rebbe Eliezer was correct. He was right. But we don't follow Nisim when determining the halacha. How is the halacha determined? Seichel ha'anoshi. Hashem gave the Torah to man, and he said, when a question concerning the interpretation of the Torah arises, you, using your intellect, should figure out what the resolution is. And when there's a dispute, so follow the majority opinion. Gemara continues. Amar Rabbi Yoshua Raglav Amar Lo Bashamayim Hi. Mai Lo Bashamayim Hi. Amar Birmiya. Shekfar Nasna Torah Mehar Sinai. Nitna Torah Mehar Sinai. Ein Anu Mashgichim Bevaskol. Shekfar Kasavta Bar Sinai B'Torah. Achre Rabim Lahatos. The Torah tells us how to resolve a dispute. And it's not through miracles or through Baskols. Ashkecha Rabbi Nasan Lel Yahu. Amar Le Mai. Avid kutshabarichu baishaita amar lei kachayach v'amar nitzchuni vanai, nitzchuni vanai. So that's what the Ran says. The Ran says that these miracles might indicate that the truth of the matter was that one opinion, Klapish Mayagalia, was more correct. But Hashem told us how to resolve disputes. And we don't have to outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. If this is what Hashem said to do, that in the case of a machlokas, follow Rav, so that's what we're supposed to do? Yeah.
How would you understand Eilu then? Could be other sides later on.
Good, good. So Eilu v'Eilu means that there, again, you could go back to the Chida's explanation or something along those lines, there is an aspect, an element of truth in both positions. But it's impossible to say that they're both equally true. That's simply illogical, right? Either it's Tameh or it's Tahor. Yeah?
Is there an explanation for why this, why Hashem would give this role? I mean, it normally doesn't really matter. We don't really know what Hashem believes in the MS. In that one case, it's really the only time that we really do. But is there an explanation for why Hashem said, don't follow me specifically?
Perhaps the Gemara is telling us in general how we're supposed to approach a machlokas and why we don't have to feel or be concerned that we're doing the wrong thing. We might be messing up because we're doing what the Torah said. That's actually what Rav Moshe writes in that Hakdama that I told you. He writes, very interesting, he says that, you know, I've been answering questions for many years. When somebody asks me a shaila, so I answer that. Because I have no choice but to answer. The Gemara says, right, that if you ask the shaila and you're right, you have to answer. A person can't say, I'm just not going to answer your questions. There's an achrayas. So when somebody asks me a question, so I have to answer. And what if I'm wrong? So I'm not worried. You know, I'm going to go up to Shemaim after 120 years, and they're going to say, Rav Moshe, you gave the wrong answer. So Moshe, look, I was following the halacha, shteit in Shulchan Aruch, that somebody asks you a shayla, and you're right, you have to be more. But I never published my tshuvos, because it doesn't say that you have to disseminate your aros for millions of people to read. It says you have to answer the shayla, so I answered the shayla. But I've been hesitant to publish the horos because what if I'm wrong? So then he said, but then I remembered the Gemara in Shabbos that we said before, that the inhabitants of the town of Rabbi Eliezer were even rewarded for following his view despite the fact that it was wrong. And Rav Moshe says, yeah, it's possible that my answers are wrong. But if somebody follows, in other words, he doesn't take the Ritva's approach, he doesn't say, yeah, you know, my answers are right. If it fits the Torah, it's right. No, my answers might be wrong. But I'm not worried that in Shamayim they'll have tainus against me for telling people the wrong answers. Because what the story from the Gemara and Shabbos tells us is if you follow what the Torah says, you'll be okay. You don't have to, like I said, you don't have to outsmart HaKadosh Baruch Hu. HaKadosh Baruch Hu told us, this is what we should do. He gave us the system because obviously it's the best possible system. A system where you had to turn to a Navi to resolve every question is not the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wants us to have. And what the story in Bava Metzia is teaching us is that we don't need to worry about that. Every Chrav have to obviously try their best to come up with the emes. But once you've done what you could do, and we follow the roves, you don't have to worry. The fact that you don't have to worry doesn't mean that they're both equally right. There's an emes in Shamayim, and there's an emes legabe hora'a. And the emes legabe hora'a doesn't always correspond to the emes in Shamayim. But, okay, that's the Torah that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us. That's the Torah that Hashem wants us to follow. And when Moshe Rabbeinu himself asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu this question, when Moshe Rabbeinu asks HaKadosh Baruch Hu, why don't you give me the solution? Hashem said to Moshe, that's not what I want. I want you to follow the road. Yeah.
In this story, for Billy Azar, isn't there some aspect of, say, Holodosh is telling you that when Hashem is telling you you're wrong, that you should recognize
Ad kedei kach. Ad kedei kach. That's gufa the chiddush. You might have thought that, and the answer is no. Hashem said, told us how to be machriya. And Hashem said, ein navi rishay l'chadish davar. And Hashem said, this is how you're machriya ashayla. The way you're machriya ashayla is by using your seichel. And the chachamim tried as hard as they could to understand Rabbi Eliezer's position. And they looked at his rayos. And they saw his rayos, and they said, he doesn't seem to be correct. I don't think his raya is right. It goes against my raya. And obviously this is an extreme case, but it's telling us you never have to worry about it, because this is what Hashem said. Now the Ran, we'll get back to this a little later, Ran Taka asks the question, well, why don't you have to be worried? It's wrong. In other words, once we're going to say that there is an MS, and Klape Shmaya, there is one position that's correct, so shouldn't there be a concern that a person will be harmed by following that which is Eino Emes? So we're going to get back to the Ran's question. That's a question that needs to be answered. And what's so fascinating is the Ran acknowledges that his understanding does not answer that question. He comes on to a different Chiddush to answer that question. So we'll get to his Chiddush, how to answer that question. Why you don't have to be bothered by the possibility that maybe I'm wrong, and therefore I'll be harmed by following the position that I think is correct, if in reality it's wrong. So the Ran has the kasha, and he gives a teretz. So we'll see his answer. I want to get to another model before I get to that answer, because it brings up another issue. So that's a kasha. It's a valid kasha according to this approach. Why don't you have to be worried? But that doesn't undermine this mahalich. Yeah.
Were there some shilas that were answered by the early Tumim?
So there's an interesting question, what are the parameters of Lo Bashamayim Hi? It's true, Ein Mashkichim BeBaskol, but there do seem to be places in Shas that we follow Baskol. What about places where it seems that we consider dreams in halachic matters? What about the Urim Metumim and the like? So that's not our Shaila for now, but there's a very big literature on this topic, what the parameters of Lo Bashamayim Hi? Does that mean never? Does it mean sometimes? What about yes? What about no? So it's a good question, but not for now. Generally speaking, the Urim V'Tumim were not used to determine the halachic questions. Urim V'Tumim were used for things like, should we go to war, should we not go to war, which portion of Eretz Yisrael goes to this person or that person or this tribe or that tribe. And there Hashem said, okay, this is how you do the allotments of Eretz Yisrael. You follow the Urim V'Tumim. That's not a contradiction to Lo Bashamayim Hi. But when we had a shaila about whether this is Tameh or Tahor, so they didn't go to the Urim V'Tumim and try to resolve the question that way. Okay. Another place in Chazal where you see the usage of Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, which I think is very telling, is the Gemara in Gittin. On the one hand, this isn't as powerful because it's in the context of an Agadita or Parshanut, as opposed to the Elu V'Elu that we started off from the Gemara in Erevin, which was a matter in Halacha. But at the same time, I think it's very telling in terms of the approach that it takes. So this is a Gemara that's discussing the story of Pilagesh Begiva, Ksiv Atisnai Lav Pilaksho. So what exactly did she do that caused him to throw her out? So Chazal understand it doesn't mean that there was actually a form of znus. That would be problematic for different reasons. Rather, there was something that she did that got her husband very upset. What exactly was it? Rabbi Avyasar Amar Zvov Matzala. Rabbi Yonasan Amar Nima Matzala. The Ashkeche Rabbi Avyasar Le Eliyahu. Amar Lai, my covenant HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So Eliyahu, Rabbi Avyasar once bumps into Eliyahu. And he asks him, "Nu, where's the Kaddish Baruch Hu holding? What's he learning now?" So Amar Lai, Asik Bipi Pilagesh Begiva. He's learning the sugi of Pilagesh Begiva. My kamer, nu, so Vushtate, what did the Kaddish Baruch Hu say? Amar Lai, Avyasar Bini Kachu Omer, Yonasan Bini Kachu Omer. HaKadosh Baruch Hu had a chakira. Which was it? Was it a zvuv? Was it a hair? Amar Lei, chas v'shalom, umiya kasveka klape shmaya. How could that be? Was HaKadosh Baruch Hu really unsure? That doesn't make any sense. It's kfira. You think HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't know what happened? Lemaisa was one or the other. Did he find a hair and throw her out? Or did he find... throw out, she left. Or did he find his vuv? L'chora, there's one right answer. Amar lei, elu v'elu divrei Elokim chayim, zvuv matza v'lo hikbid, nima matza v'hikbid. They're both divrei Elokim chayim. What actually happened was he found a zvuv and he wasn't makbid, he let it go. And then he found a hair. Ah, he blew up. You know, sometimes... you know, a little thing a person could forgive, or one thing a person could forgive. But then there's the straw that broke the camel's back. That was the hair. Now, here we have Elu V'Elu being applied to a Metzias. What actually happened? And even Rabbeinu Peretz's theory wouldn't explain it, because even if you could say, like we said, both interpretations could fit the pasuk, but lamaisa, one thing happened or the other. So where is the elu v'elu? Where is the room for elu v'elu? So the Gemara answers that the answer rests upon understanding what we mean when we say caused. When we ask what caused him to be angry, well, cause could mean the initial cause, what started it all, or could mean the final cause. It's just like if I ask you what started World War I. So one person will say it was the shooting, and one person will say it was this, and one person will say that, and they could all be right. There could be lots of causes for something. Okay, so it's a very nice resolution. But what's the Gemara telling us? So I think what the Gemara is telling us is a very important yesod, which is that from the perspective of Rabbi Avyasar and Rabbi Yonasan, the two approaches were mutually exclusive. It was inconceivable that they were both right. When they were arguing with each other, so Rabbi Avyasar said, "I'm right, and you, Rabbi Yonasan, are wrong. But if it turns out you're wrong, you're right, I'm wrong." They both can't be true. From the perspective of the protagonists of the debate, only one possible solution was conceivable. And nevertheless, we still apply Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, because Elu V'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim rests upon the recognition that sometimes there are resolutions that we are unaware of. We don't know how it's possible that both are true, and sometimes both positions might be correct in ways that we could never have imagined. So if the Rashba and the Rambam are arguing, and as far as we could tell, if the Rashba's right, the Rambam's wrong. If the Rambam's right, the Rashba's wrong. From our perspective, there is no resolution. But what the Gemara is telling us is that our perspective is sometimes limited. And there are certainly times where you'll have a debate with someone and you'll be sure that the two positions are exclusive. And then it turns out, in a way that you never dreamed of, they were both right. And that's exactly what Eliyahu is telling Rabbi Avyasar over here. I think a similar approach can be seen in Tosfos and Rosh Hashanah, page 36, concerning the debate about when the world was created. Mikan matzlinan zayom tchilas masacha. Come on, Rabbi Lazar. Umashi yasid Rabbi Lazar kalir begashem deshmini ataris Rabbi Lazar. to Amar B'Tishrei Nivra Olam Uvishal Pesach Yasid Krib Yeshua. Lamaisa, we have some tefillos where we imply that Nisan Nivra Olam or Birkas Hachama. We have tefillos that tell us that B'Tishrei Nivra Olam, like Hayom Haras Olam. Which one is it? Om Rabbeinu Tam Deilu Veilu Divra Lukim Chayim Vekel Amemer De B'Tishrei Al Machshava Levaros Velo Nivra Ad Nisan Udekavase Ashkechan Bepek Osin Pasin Gabi Adam Shal Machshava Levrosa Shnayim Ulvasov Lo Nivra El Echad. What's Rabbeinu Tam saying? L'chayra, again, the two Tanoim that debate as to whether it was created B'Nisan or B'Tishrei sounds like they thought it was a Machlokas. They didn't think that they're both talking about different things. One of them is talking about Al B'Machshava and one of them is talking about when L'maisa was befo'el created. No. As far as the protagonists in the debate were concerned, the two views were mutually exclusive. However, Aliba de Emes, they're both true. And they're true in a way that perhaps those involved don't understand. And this is very similar to the approach of the Ritva, of the Chachmei Tzarfas, that there are multiple truths. But what it suggests is that the multiple truths are not rooted in the historical event of what happened at Sinai, that Hashem told Moshe both X and Y and told him, you be Machriya, but rather they're both true in ways that we can't fathom. Rav Volbi has a very nice mashal, it's in Ali Shur Chelek Beis, page 520, that I think captures this idea. And he compares it to wave-particle duality. He says that, as far as we could tell, if something is a wave, it's not a particle. If it's a particle, it's not a wave. They have different functions, different properties, they move differently, and the like. And if you would have asked anybody before it was discovered that this duality exists, they would have told you that either it's one or the other, but it can't possibly be both. Now, we know that it is both. How we resolve that? Sarchir. We don't know. But we're comfortable saying that somehow or another it is both, depending on how you look at it. And the resolution we don't know, but that's okay. We don't need to know the resolution. When we're learning a sugya and we see a machlokas between the Rambam and the Rashba, we don't have to try to solve how it is possible that both are true. We acknowledge that there are things that we don't understand. So our goal is to understand the Rambam to the best of our ability, and to understand the Rashba to the best of our ability, and in terms of figuring out halacha l'maisa, so there are certain klalei hora, and we'll use those to figure out what to do tachlis. And we could say, somehow or another, it might be the case that they're both equally true. How it's possible that they're resolved, I don't know. I also don't know how something could be a wave and a particle, how an electron could have both. Rav Kook, I think, also embraces this idea. Take a look at page 37. This, the context of this letter is quite fascinating. You can see a little bit in footnote 45 on the bottom of page 37. But for now, we'll have to skip it. Hello, where it's bolded. Hello, Iker Atzad Shel Chiddush Shebidvarai Hu, Mashemitzad Machshav Halyona, Hasokeres Es Amkom Shel Dvarim, Ein B'Mitzius Klal Hafachim. V'Chol Makom Sheyesh Hafachim, Yesh Sham Bevadei Eze Tanai Nalam. The fact that two things seem like they are in contrast, that they're opposites, that they're irreconcilable, reflects a missing detail that we don't understand. Shekshi yisparesh nimtza sheshnei hamishpatim sheniru b'mivtau v'tziur hafachim she'echad mehem hu banui al tzad echad mehamishpat v'asheni al tzad acher V'nimtza sh'al yedei shnei ha'afachim yachdav anu roim es ha'mishpat mishnei tzadav. V'nimtza she'en kan ha'afachim b'derech echleit. U'mitzidam en kan nosei achad kevan she'hayichusim shel ha'nosei heim shonim. And you could read on. There's another parallel, by the way, to quantum physics also in this respect, which again we don't have time to marach on, but the role of the observer, right? Anyway, Rav Dessler takes this idea, I think, in a certain sense, one step further, and he writes, especially when it comes to matters of Agadita, there's no true debate whatsoever. These simply reflect two different perspectives. Take a look over here on page 36. Ulam klal gadol hu, kishechazal omrim deo shonos b'inyanei agada, hare kulan me'iros oso nosei, mitzdadim shonim, mebchinos shonos, ve'ena mechulakim. Perhaps he means what we said. What do you mean there's no machlokas? Does that mean that the sides in the debate actually thought that they weren't arguing and just presenting another perspective? Maybe. Or perhaps it means that Aliba de Emes, we can see this as two perspectives, even though we can't always resolve how both of them are true, and even if the protagonists in the debate were unaware. Likewise, he quotes a Zohar, V'nei Mefurish, B'tikune Zohar, De Binyanei Agad V'Kabbalah, Lo Shaykh Machlokes, V'abir Hu Kanal, Mishum Sheshneim Abatim Emes, Kol Echad B'vchinaso, V'eino Chaluk L'maseh, U'pirish Pligi B'zeh, Hu Mufrash V'chaluk Zeh Mizeh. And I think, just since we're out of time, you know, this question is going to very much affect how we see machlokas and how we relate to debate. The famous comments of the Aruch HaShulchan in his Hakdama to Choshen Mishpat, where he compares the different views about a matter, and even in halachic realm, to the different voices and sounds in an orchestra, where the various instruments emit different sounds, and only when they play together does everything come together. Rav Kook famously writes, that's what it means when we say, Talmidei Chachamim Marbim Shalom Ba'olam. And you could ask, what do you mean, Talmidei Chachamim are Marbim Shalom? They're Marbim Machlokas. Everything you look, Machlokas Rishonim, Machlokas, everything seems to be Machlokas. So where's the Ribui Shalom? And the answer, he says, is that shalom comes from the word shlemus. And it's only when we see the different perspectives that we could see the bigger picture. Because each person is limited from their own perspective. We're all limited. And the machlokas allows us to see the broader picture and come to a truer understanding. And that's true, as we've been seeing, even when we can't really figure out how the different perspectives work together. Again, like we said before, this doesn't mean that every position is true. Elu v'elu, not elu v'elu v'elu v'elu. There's a difference between machlokos within the Rishonim or the Chachmei Masorah and anything that anybody says. But nevertheless, in terms of viewing how we see machlokas, like the Gemara Chagiga says, you might be overwhelmed at the various different positions. No, asay aznachaka afar chases, make your ear like a hopper, a type of funnel, and recognize that kula meroa achad nitnu. They all came from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They all come from Sinai. They're all true. And if we are open to accepting that, then we'll end up with a much more true perspective than the narrow perspective we would ordinarily have if we rely entirely on our own vision.